My name is Mary Bullard, bar number 39382, and I represent the defendant, Ms. Cheryl Jo Bowles, who is present in the courtroom today. As the challenge for cause issue was thoroughly addressed in the briefs below, today I'd like to focus on the issues surrounding Ms. Bowles being tried while she was intermittently unconscious, as it is a fairly unique factual situation, at least in Colorado courts, unless this court has further questions with regard to the juror issue. Hearing none, there are two main problems with respect to Ms. Bowles being tried while unconscious. First, Ms. Bowles' state and federal constitutional rights to be present, to assist in her defense, and to confront witnesses against her were plainly violated when she was tried while she was asleep at the defense table.
Ms. Bullard,
yes.
I perhaps have an erroneous and a different view of the record. My understanding of the record is that she, in fact, wasn't tried when she was unconscious. She was tried at all times pertinent while she was awake. That at the beginning of the trial, there was some question as to whether or not she was falling asleep, and you got a recess. Things were worked out with the physician. And as I read the record, on the next day, as trial proceeded, everything was okay with defense counsel. And so, to the extent that there is some sort of argument that she was unfairly deprived of a trial because she was unconscious, not only is that not the case, but that argument was waived.
All right. Well, I would respectfully disagree. I believe the record shows that the defense counsel objected on numerous occasions throughout the first day of trial and raised the issue of the fact that Ms. Bowles was sound asleep during trial.
How about the second day of trial?
Okay.
What objections were made then?
If we're going to go there, I would first point out that if a defendant is asleep at any point or not present, if she's physically present but not lacks the present ability to have any awareness of her surroundings at any point during her trial, during the critical stages, which includes voir dire, which includes testimony of the primary witness against her, which was Officer Ekins, I would say that that would be harmful in and of itself. And the fact that trial then continues with her being awake does not ameliorate the harm of not being present that first day. The record indicates that defense counsel noted that she had concerns that Ms. Bowles was falling asleep during voir dire, during the instructions that were given to the jury prior to the start of trial. And then finally, while Officer Ekins was testifying on direct and being directly examined by the prosecutor. The prosecutor agreed, in fact.
Yes, in fact, my understanding is the prosecutor had some concerns about competency.
Yes.
And said that if there are any concerns about competency, we ought to hear about it right now. And defense counsel said, no, that's not a problem.
I believe that the defense counsel did not want to raise competency specifically. However, defense counsel did raise the fact that Ms. Bowles was not aware of her surroundings, and therefore this affected her right to be present, as well as her right to assist in her defense, noting that she would be unable to do either one of those things.
Ms. Bullard, but didn't her very own lawyer participate in developing a solution to her sleepiness, which was, you know, again, to get information from the doctor, and when they couldn't reach the doctor, the pharmacist and the nurse, to reduce her dosages and then to take a recess. I mean, the trial court did everything defense counsel asked for. So what is she complaining about now?
Okay. I would disagree because defense counsel raised the issue of her sleeping early. I mean, we're talking about during voir dire. And at that point, the minute you have a defendant that's sleeping at the defense table, and the jurors are watching this happen. And as defense counsel noted, you know, there are looks, there are glances. We have a prospective juror who comes forward and says, hey, you know, I noticed that she was sound asleep while you're trying to defend her. I think that at that point you have a jury who is noticing the fact that the defendant is asleep, and that's inherently prejudicial because it seems, particularly in a drug case where it's reasonable to assume that they're going to take adverse inferences from that she didn't care if she was there, that she, you know, perhaps even was on drugs. And what happened here is that defense counsel raised this issue first, Nothing was done. Then later on, raised it again, said, now I have even more concerns because we're in the, you know, we're dealing with a hard
something trial. Was done. I mean, defense counsel didn't say, okay, let's stop trial. I think you have to call it mistrial. Defense counsel said, we need an instruction. We need to let the jury know
yes,
what's
and
going
they didn't
on.
Get the instruction that they asked for.
They got an instruction.
They got an instruction that simply said, her condition, her sleeping episodes may be caused by medication. They didn't tell them that you, and they certainly didn't tell the jury, most importantly, that they had to disregard the fact that that was caused by, whatever it was caused by, that her sleeping is not something that they could take into account in their deliberations. And that is something that no matter whether it was voluntary or involuntary, they could not take the fact that she was asleep and use it against her, because particularly in the record here, as it is, I believe it establishes that it was an involuntary behavior that was caused by her taking, you know, a cocktail of four mental health medications. And mental health is obviously central to having a fair trial in the first place. And so what the defense counsel asked for was not given.
I'm sorry, counsel. No, I'd like to ask a somewhat different question, if I may. Under Rule 43, if your client had, after the first part of the trial, had gotten up and left court and not come back, Rule 43 of the criminal rules makes it clear that the trial can proceed. She's not even there, right?
Trial can proceed in certain cases, yes.
So in that case, I think the reason behind the rule is that if a defendant makes a conscious choice to say, I'm out of here, well, the trial still goes forward.
We don't have a voluntary knowing.
There's no indication in the record, is there, that she was involuntarily ingested this medication, is there? She voluntarily took it. And thus...
But what was her other choice?
Well, does that matter? I mean, if she voluntarily took... Well, Ms. Boyd, we're going way beyond the record here. We don't know what her other choices were because that's not in the record.
Okay.
And so I'm suggesting that if she voluntarily took this, she took the risk that she might be drowsy during the case. And isn't that just like a defendant who says, I ain't coming?
I don't believe so. There's no indication that she knew that this is that she would be sitting for hours at a time in her normal day-to-day life and therefore would fall asleep or recognize that these are the kind of symptoms that would come about during trial. We don't know, like you said, the record doesn't show when the prescription was changed. And so, but what we do know is that she fell asleep at the defense trial during the main part of her trial, during voir dire and during the testimony of an officer.
Did her... Aside from the request for an instruction, at the first time counsel approached the bench, did counsel say, stop the trial?
No, not specifically. However, she did raise the issue.
I understand.
At that point, that triggered the court's duty.
But counsel didn't say stop the trial.
No.
And at the time counsel asked for the instruction, did counsel say stop the trial?
No. Defense counsel asked for the court to instruct the jury to disregard the fact that her client had been asleep and to not take that into consideration. She further asked the court to instruct the jury that that was caused by the prescription medication.
I understand.
And
whose idea was it to continue the case till the next day?
Defense counsel and prosecution's.
So when that got asked, the trial court said, sounds good to me, and that's what happened.
Yes. However, I believe that this is structural error, and I don't think that you can qualify this as the type of invited error, because there's no benefit that can be gained from continuing a trial once a defendant has been tried while she is asleep at the defense table. That is inherently prejudicial, and there's no way that it cannot be harmless to defense rights.
Ms. Bullard, wouldn't it be a far different situation had defense counsel presented something from the physician that could be in the record that said, I prescribed these medications and those medications caused her to sleep? But we don't have that. What we have is we have defense counsel making representation to the court that she spoke with the doctor and these medications are likely the cause of her being drowsy.
I believe what we're dealing with is when a defense counsel makes multiple attempts to contact the doctor is in surgery, and therefore he cannot personally respond. He is able to contact the pharmacist, and he's able to contact the nurse, who both confirm what the dosages are and what drugs she is taking and the side effects of those drugs. She attempts to have that information faxed, but due to technological difficulties, that does not happen. We have to note that trial then goes on at 8 a.m. the next day. Trial continues at the end of the day, basically at the end of office hours. There's no ability.
With no request for a further continuance.
To obtain information that the defense counsel as an officer of the court is already conveying to the court. The court is basically, the court says that I, you know, it's not that I don't trust you, basically. I just want this information for the record. That is a totally different argument than saying, well, I need this, you know, and without this, I have no proof of.
But the basis of the prosecution's objection mm-hmm. was that they had no independent way of verifying this information. And in fact, I mean, we don't know whether the prosecution would have withdrawn their objection had they had the medical documentation, which was, you know, exclusively within the defendant's own control. I mean, she's the one that could go to her doctor's office to secure that information.
Well, was she supposed to go there during outside of office hours? I believe that every attempt that could have been made was made. And what we had, all that they had at the time of trial continuing, was defense counsel's word as to this is, you know, this is what I learned. But again, I just want to go back to the beginning here, which is that the main point is that no matter what the cause of her sleepiness or those unconscious episodes, the jury should have been instructed to disregard it. I mean, if we had a drunk defendant at the counsel table, there is no way trial would have continued. And yet here we have a defendant who's asleep, and trial continues while jurors are noticing that she's sound asleep. I don't see how anyone could possibly have a fair trial under those circumstances. I'd ask to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
May it please the court, John First for the people. I think I'll start with the questions regarding the what the record showed, what the record did not show. What the record does not show is that once evidentiary portion of the trial started, once the prosecution's first witness began to testify, defense counsel made no record that the defendant was actually asleep during any of that portion. Didn't make that record, just asked to approach the bench. They let the jury go, and they discussed this some more. And at that point, counsel, that was the right call. Once the meat of the trial began, that was the first time that counsel raised the issues regarding right to present a defense, right to be present. And I think it's important to recognize, I think this court does, as to how this issue arose. I mean, the first mention in the record was at the end of jury selection, at the end of the morning, because lunch, after this initial discussion, they recessed for lunch. And it was at that point that defense counsel was again renewing a request for an instruction. We don't have, the record doesn't show any prior request, maybe it probably off the record, because I could find nothing on the record as to this prior request that the counsel was referring to, but I think we have to assume it was there. I have no reason to doubt trial counsel, defense counsel.
The record is fairly clear that she was sleeping during voir dire.
Well, we know that she was nodding off. We don't know to what extent. There was no record made as to, and that's part of the problem here, is just that the record is, yes, but obviously there was a problem, and we've conceded that. It was recognized below, but to what extent? I mean, unconscious? Not even, nobody below used that word.
Mr. First, but don't we have the email from the juror that did not end up serving that does document that at least, you know, while she was there, before she was excused, the client's falling asleep? Will that tell us that it was, it had been an issue?
She said kept falling asleep, but, yeah, but Your Honor, what does that mean, falling asleep? I mean, maybe that'd be another comment on the criminal justice system and the trial, and it was, you know, what was actually going on here. I mean, is that falling asleep or is that drowsiness? I mean, there was some posturing going on here from defense counsel when they first broached the subject, said, as the court may have noticed, my client falls asleep a lot. Okay, that was how she first put it. In the same paragraph of transcript, when she's asking for an instruction, she wants to do her, it nods off on occasion. Later on, defense counsel herself used drowsiness. Defense counsel herself said sleepiness. Sleepiness is not falling asleep. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying she wasn't asleep. And what defense counsel said when they finally got to the point where they had to recess was that she was asleep during the entire reading of the general instructions right before opening argument. So that's the only definite verifiable. That's the only clear point in the record where she was truly asleep. And we conceded that in our brief as well. It's hard to say. Obviously, she was drowsy. Maybe she fell asleep. Clearly.
Pardon me for interrupting, Mr. First, but I have two questions for you. The first question is, up until the time that everyone agreed, let's have a recess until the next day and see what we can work out, did defense counsel make any request of the court to stop the trial?
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
So was the only request for relief from defense counsel that an instruction be given?
That was the point I was starting to get at before. When this was initially raised at the end of jury selection in the morning, it was raised in the context of having the jury advised. At that point, there was no objection. My client's right to be present, my client's right to assist in the defense, my client's right to confrontation, my effectiveness is being jeopardized. Your Honor, we need a mistrial. That never happened.
Well, as I understand it, what counsel wanted is an instruction that says, hey, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you can't take any adverse inference as a result of this defendant falling asleep from time to time. Because her drowsiness may be subject to or caused by medications.
And subject to misinterpretation, and she effectively got that instruction. And, you know, to talk about the instruction, and again, this going right to the record, when counsel first raised this question, she did say two things, requests that that the defendant's condition is medical in nature, and that the jury is not to come to any conclusions when they see her nod off on occasion. Well, this went back and forth, and these requests for instructions were made two or three different times. And on the next day, the issue came up again, of course, and counsel again asked for the instruction. The court proposed instruction to the jury that said defendant may be on medication which causes drowsiness and permit her to stand to combat the drowsiness. And at that point, the court didn't even say, and the jury's draw negative inference. This is in conference when they're discussing it. There was no objection by counsel at that point as to language. I think it was at that point it's incumbent upon counsel, since counsel, this was the whole focus of counsel, primary focus of counsel's concern until the evidence started, was the instruction. If the exact wording of the instruction had been that important and counsel had that kind of objection to the language that the court proposed, it was incumbent upon the defendant to to object, and that's not, and not only did counsel not object then, counsel didn't object when the court gave the instruction and said maybe on some medication, and so if she stands up, please draw a negative inference. And it was clear what the court was saying. I mean, counsel, and defendant on appeal is saying, well, instructions should have said no draw, no negative inference from sleepiness, but everybody knew it was clear.
Mr. Pierce, as I understand Ms. Bullard, at this point, she's saying, and I don't mean to put words in her mouth, but as I understood her argument, it doesn't make any difference about the instruction at this point. I think there was structural error in the trial as a result of my client not being present, because she essentially was not present.
The Supreme Court says otherwise in terms of what kind of error is quantifiable. Rushing v. Spain, our courts have said right to be present is subject to trial level analysis. And it's our position, contrary to the reply brief, and I couldn't have been more clear in my answer brief, that as to the issues, the constitutional based issues, it's plain error. I'm not sure how you can read my brief and attribute harmless error, but anyway.
But doesn't the defense make a good point in their opening brief at page 26 that the nodding off behavior could also be associated with, with behavior that you would observe from a drug addict? And wouldn't that necessarily prejudice defendant, especially since the charges that were at issue had to do with drug issues?
I think it can go one way or the other. I think it's speculation. And in terms of prejudice, it has to be prejudice against the defendant. I mean, the email certainly suggests prejudice, bias, sympathy on behalf of the defendant. So, no, I don't think so. I can't agree with that position that the defense counsel takes. Judge Bernard, you asked about the voluntariness of the medication. I think there is something in the record that shows that it was voluntary, because at the direct the court to the Curtis advisement, when the court asked if, and I may have a record cite for that. Page 451 of the CD. When the court asked if she was taking medication, and she went through three of the four drugs and thought there were two more, she wasn't sure. But she said, I'm not taking that dose. And she had the choice. But it's unclear whether she meant she wasn't taking anything for the second day, or whether, because there was some discussion about changing the dosage. That came up at the end of the day when they decided to adjourn after discussion with the nurse or the pharmacist.
I think her point is that, and maybe it's a semantical difference, but she was prescribed medication for mental health issues, and she took the medication in accordance with the instructions of the physician.
And she didn't the next day. You're right, Your Honor. But I mean, the whole point here is that the record is just too ambiguous. And I think the ambiguities in the record, I think, suggest the court's use of the word may in the instruction, because there is no proof. I mean, yeah, sure, counsel was an officer of the court, but as the court noted, the trial court noted, there are other inferences that the jury could draw. And I mean, this is an important thing, and the prosecution had a point too. And Judge Fox, as you noticed, everything that defense counsel was on top of this at all times. And relayed defendant's statement to her that, when, can you hear anything when you're asleep, when you're falling asleep? No, but I trust you. I mean, if that's not waiver, I don't know what is, in conjunction with the whole record. So I just don't see the record supporting. I guess this, what am I trying to say? This is a different case on appeal than it was below. And unless the court has other questions, I just ask that you affirm the convictions. Thank you.
Lord, you have a little more than 3 minutes.
I guess I would start with the fact that, you know, this issue with regards to the instruction was clearly preserved. I mean, defense counsel specifically requested that the court instruct the jury to ensure that it was not coming to any conclusions when they see her nod off. And then, you know, the prosecution initially asked for a similar instruction. And when the court informed defense counsel it would not give that instruction because of the lack of evidence of why Ms. Bowles was nodding off, she was not required to repeat her request at that point. Her request had been denied, and she had already tendered it. There was no point in rehashing the issue. So what we have here is a request for a specific instruction that was denied. It's preserved for appeal. A cautionary instruction was required. Again, this type of factual scenario has not arisen, so far as I can find, in Colorado, at least, you know, a defendant falling asleep at defense table. However, there are cases that involve defendants not being present or absenting themselves. And in each of those cases, the court gives an instruction to the jury saying, you can't take that into consideration during your deliberations, please disregard. And that's really key to the harmlessness of that lack of being present. And here we don't have that. And it's well preserved. And you know, here we don't have overwhelming evidence of guilt. Granted, evidence of the drugs was found on Ms. Bowles' person. However, it's found in an opaque pouch. And so there is reason to believe that she didn't know what she was holding for her friend. And under the circumstances, there's no way that she could have received a fair trial. She was not able to consult with her attorney. She was not able to confront the main witness against her. She was not, able to be physically present and show the jury, you know, I care, et cetera, simply because she was taking prescribed mental health medication. And I don't see how you can punish a defendant for attempting to maintain her competency and her mental health during a proceeding against her. And granted, she reduced the dosage the next day after consultation with a nurse who advised her that that would be all right. But that was also after the court basically said, that's the only way we're going to continue this trial. Very limited options at that point.
Ms. Fuller, but wasn't she in the very best position to let her counsel know that this was a problem before the trial even started? In fact,
talking about a mental health issue, right? Underlying, that's why you get prescribed mental health medications, because you have mental health issues. So I believe that we have no reason to know whether or not Ms. Bowles was aware that these are the type of side effects that she would suffer, because we don't know if Ms. Bowles sits still all day long on her daily occurrence, because as it was said, you know, when she's up and about, it was all right, but when she was sitting down, she...
We don't know because she didn't let her lawyer know, so the lawyer can let the court...
The lawyer did talk to her physician, or at least her nurse and the pharmacist, who did confirm that. But in any case, I see that my time is up, and I would ask this court to reverse.
Thank you, Ms. Bullard. Thank you, Mr. First. Thanks to both counsels for excellent arguments. They were helpful to us. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.